Welcome to Computing Lives, a podcast from the IEEE Annals of the History of Computing. Our modern computer interface, with its mice and its windows, owes a great deal to the work of Douglas Engelbart. Now, Engelbart is not as well known as the captains of industry, but he influenced those captains far more than they influenced him. This month's Computing Lives is a four-part podcast that explores the story of this computing pioneer. The first part is called Developing the Underlying Concepts for the Contemporary Computer. Today, people do not need to know the name of Thomas Alva Edison to turn on an electric light and read a book. Similarly, they don't need to know the name of Douglas Carl Engelbart to turn on a personal computer, click on an icon with a mouse, and access the digital libraries of the world. However, unlike Edison, Engelbart remains a little-known figure in the history of technology. Engelbart remains unfamiliar, despite the fact that he invented the mouse, the window-style computer screen displays, and other key concepts that are used every day when people operate their computers. For over 30 years, Engelbart has pursued a vision of interacting with computers that has remained mostly ignored by the computer industry. However, without realizing it, the computer industry has spent the last 20 years implementing those very ideas that Engelbart first demonstrated in the 1960s. Engelbart's goal was to develop interactive computer systems that would match computational capabilities with human capabilities. He was interested in designing a new category of computer applications that would augment, not automate. Utilizing computing technology, Engelbart envisioned a future in which individuals and small groups would be able to augment the strengths of their most important natural tools for dealing with the world, the abilities to perceive, to think, to reason, to analyze, and to communicate. First, he wrote a paper to explain his framework for a developing interactive computing. Afterwards, he built a working model to demonstrate his vision. In the process of creating that model, Engelbart designed a series of interactive computer tools that became the foundation for the future development of hypertext, for computer-supported cooperative work, the graphical user interface, electronic mail, on-screen editing, video conferencing, and the World Wide Web. Engelbart began his engineering career at Oregon State College in 1942. He enrolled in an electrical engineering program because he was interested in learning about radar. World War II was in progress, and Engelbart recalls, "By the end of my sophomore year, if you were in college in engineering, you were getting deferred. But they dropped all that, and so I got drafted at the end of my sophomore year. And when you get drafted, you can opt for different choices. So I took a test that the Navy was giving for radar, trying to screen people to go into this new technology. So, as an enlisted man, I got to get drafted into the Navy and go into its year-long training program." Engelbart was drafted into the U.S. Navy, where he was introduced to a number of new technologies, including wave propagation, antennas, and amplifiers. Following this training, Engelbart was sent to the Philippines. As his ship backed out of its berth in San Francisco, whistles and firecrackers started going off and people began cheering. Japan had just surrendered. Instead of going into active combat, Engelbart was sent to the Philippines to help with the demobilization effort. As a Navy electronics technician, he took care of radios, sonar, teletype transmission, and radar. This experience was an introduction to all types of new communications technologies. Engelbart's vision of using the computer as an interactive communication tool began to take shape after the end of World War II. Toward the end of his naval career, he read Vannevar Bush's article, As We May Think, that was published in the July 1945 issue of Atlantic Monthly. The article inspired Engelbart to pursue a career developing better communication and knowledge tools. Bush published the article as a reflection on how technology could help solve problems in a post-war society. During the war, Bush realized that the amount of scientific data being written, collected, was growing at an accelerated pace. As a result, he believed that people would need new types of knowledge tools to locate, organize, coordinate, analyze, and navigate through the increasing volumes of research information. As we may think, Bush described a hypothetical device called a memex, a memory extender, as an example of the type of knowledge tools that should be developed. The memex was a workstation conceived to use a variety of analog technologies, such as microfilm readers and storage. Bush described it as follows. The memex is a device in which an individual stores all his books, records, and communications, and which is mechanized so that it may be consulted with exceeding speed and flexibility. It is an enlarged, intimate supplement to his memory. It consists of a desk, and while it can be presumably operated from a distance, it is primarily a piece of furniture at which he works. On the top are slanting translucent screens on which material can be projected for convenient reading. There's a keyboard, a set of buttons and levers. Otherwise, it looks like an ordinary desk. Bush's memex was envisioned to aid the process of thinking through a mechanized indexing system. Different pieces of information in the system could be connected by creating individualized associative trails. A trail was similar to the trail of mental association in a person's mind. Used as an augmentation tool, the memex would supplement and extend human memory. It would also reflect the associative nature of the human mind. In the following passage, Bush describes the process of linking trails of information. When the user is building a trail, he names it, inserts the name in his codebook, and taps it out on his keyboard. Before him are the two items to be joined, projecting into adjacent viewing positions. At the bottom of each, there are a number of blank code spaces, and a pointer is set to indicate one of these on each item. The user taps a single key, and the items are permanently joined. As we may think, was not predicting the future, but creating it. Bush's compelling vision of information technology influencing future generations of computer pioneers. After reading Bush's article, Engelbart went back to school to finish his B.S. in electrical engineering and graduated in 1948. Afterward, he took an engineering job at the Ames Research Laboratory in Mountain View, California, with the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics. But after working at Ames for several years, he got engaged to be married. The Monday after he became engaged, Engelbart realized that he had achieved all of his life goals. Get an education, get a steady job, get married. Now at the age of 25, he began to think about a new goal for his life. He later described his decision-making process as follows. I'd missed money as a goal fairly early in the decision process. The way I grew up, if you had enough money to get by, that was okay. I never knew anybody who was rich. But by 1950, it looked to me like the world was changing so fast and our problems were getting so much bigger that I decided to look for a goal in life that would have the most payoff to mankind. For several months while driving to work, Engelbart contemplated his skills and the various kinds of goals he could pursue. He was also looking for a cause that could utilize his engineering education and his interest in computers. While searching for his new goal, Engelbart realized that he ran into the same issue time and again. Like Bush, he understood that humankind was moving into an era in which the complexity and urgency of global difficulties were surpassing the traditional tools for dealing with problems. Engelbart recalled, "I had this kooky thing happen to me in 1951 when I decided to commit my career to trying to help mankind become better able to cope with complexity and urgency and the problems of the world. I had an image of sitting in front of a display and working with a computer interactively. I had been a radio and radar technician during World War II, so I knew that any signals that came out of a machine could drive any kind of hardware. They could drive whatever you wanted on a display. But I really didn't know how a computer worked. Still, I thought, boy, that's just great. The images of different symbologies that you could employ, and other people sitting at workstations connected to the same complex and working in a close collaborative way. I just said, well, that's something I can pursue as an electrical engineer, and maybe to try and follow as a goal. Based on his experiences as a radar technician, Engelbart envisioned using computers as a technology to interact with information displayed on a screen. At the time, Engelbart had never worked with a computer, but he had read about them in books. From his radar experience, Engelbart understood that if computers could show information on punched cards, paper printouts, they could write or draw information on display screens. He saw the connection among a cathode ray screen on an information processor and a medium for representing symbols to a person. Engelbart began sketching out a system that would enable people to steer through different information domains using knobs or levers or transducers. It was not until 8 years later that Engelbart was able to begin his goal of developing interactive computing systems. First, he quit his job and went to the Graduate School of Electrical Engineering at the University of California at Berkeley. Professor Paul Morton had started to explore computer science and was developing the California Digital Computer. While in graduate school, Engelbart's ideas about interactive computing were not understood or even well received by his colleagues, who were punching cards to interact with the computer. In contrast to a traditional batched processing method, Engelbart wanted to connect a keyboard to the computer and have a person interact directly with the machine. Because his ideas were not acceptable to the university community, Engelbart settled on a different research topic to complete his degree. In 1955, he earned his PhD along with a half dozen patents for bistable gaseous plasma digital devices. After leaving academia, Engelbart began to look to the commercial world as a way to pursue his vision for developing interactive computer systems. In October 1957, Engelbart accepted a job at an organization called the Stanford Research Institute, now usually called SRI. SRI was interested in conducting research in military, scientific, and commercial applications for computers. During his first 2 years at SRI, Engelbart earned a dozen patents working on magnetic computer components, fundamental digital device phenomena, and miniaturization scaling potential. By 1959, Engelbart had enough recognition at SRI to begin to pursue his own research interests. With support from SRI and a grant from the U.S. Air Force Office of Scientific Research, he worked for a couple of years to produce a paper describing his interactive computing concepts. At first, he tried to find an established discipline as a basis for the framework of his design, but people in other disciplines, such as documentation and artificial intelligence, were not interested in his ideas. Finally, he discovered a RAND Corporation report entitled Administration of Research in a Research Corporation. The thesis of the report argued that when a researcher starts an inter- or new discipline project, the researcher would encounter difficulties when approaching individuals in established disciplines. Each discipline has its own unique conceptual framework that new members of the profession begin to learn during the first year of professional school. If a conceptual framework did not exist for a new discipline research project, then an appropriate framework would have to be created. After reading this report, Engelbart started developing his own unique conceptual framework for designing interactive systems. In 1962, Engelbart finished his paper, titled A Conceptual Framework for the Augmentation of Man's Intellect, and a condensed version was published the following year. In this paper, Engelbart defined augmenting man's intellect as the capability of a man or woman to approach a complex problem or situation, gain an understanding about his or her particular needs, and derive solutions to the problems. Engelbart's systems was conceptualized to augment or to support people working in a variety of disciplines, including diplomacy, management, social science, programming, law, and design. He wanted to develop a set of core tools that all these various intellectual workers could use. Additionally, he wanted to develop specialized tools to meet peculiar requirements, to help augment the way different types of intellectual workers solve problems. In his 1963 paper, Engelbart explained his theoretical approach for developing computer-based augmentation systems. Engelbart's conceptual framework attempted to orient people toward the possibilities and problems associated with using modern technology. In developing his design theory, he started with the human perceptual system. As individual communicates to and receives information from the world through his or her motor channels. According to Engelbart, this process is of two kinds. The first category of processes included those processes of which a person is generally conscious, such as recognizing patterns, remembering, visualizing, abstracting, deducing, inducing. The second category of processes involves self-generated information, such as unconscious processing, mediating received information, and mediating conscious processing itself. These methods of processing information are acquired as individuals grow up and live within a given culture. People are specifically taught conceptual and symbolic ways to process information, including spoken and written language. Moreover, people are taught to use tools and methods for organizing structures. All of these symbolic and organizational methods constitute one big system that augments human capability. Furthermore, Engelbart argued that culture shapes the processing of information by developing techniques for us to organize and utilize our basic human intellectual capabilities so that we can understand very complex situations and attain methods for devising and implementing solutions to problems. And examining the methods and tools people use in the problem-solving process, Engelbart developed the concept of augmentation means. Augmentation means are the tools and methods used to supplement human problem-solving capabilities. Engelbart created four classes for these tools. The first, artifacts. Physical objects designed to provide for human comfort, the manipulations of things or materials, and the manipulations of symbols. Second, language. The way in which the individual classifies the picture of the world into concepts that his mind uses to model that world, and the symbols that he attaches to those concepts. Three, methodology. The methods, procedures, and strategies with which an individual organizes his goal-centered activity. Finally, four, training. The conditioning needed for the individual to bring his skills using the three augmentation means listed above to a point where they are operationally effective. You've been listening to Computing Lives. This is the first part of a four-part podcast about Douglas Engelbart. It's based on an essay by Susan Barnes that appeared in Volume 19, Number 3 of the Annals. More about the Annals and other publications of the Computer Society can be found at www.computer.org. To find the Annals, click on the Publications tab and go to Technical Magazines. Other Computer Society podcasts can be found at www.computer.org/podcasts. If you have any comments, you can send them to podcasts@computer.org. The music for this podcast came from the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, which you can find at music.podshow.com. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.